Welcome to Judgmental, the Judgment Podcast. This is episode one, and I'm your host, Andrew Galea, and my co-host is Colin Hill.
Welcome, one and all.
Right, so this is the, like we said, the first episode of the podcast, so we're going to talk about a basic introduction to the game, talk about some of the background material of the game, some of our favourite heroes, and a bit about ourselves, just introduce ourselves. So, this is also streaming live to Judgment Strip, to Twitch stream, which is Play Judgment. So if you ever want to log on and ask questions, you can. And at the end of the show, we'll answer any questions that appear on the stream. Otherwise, it'll just be in a standard audio podcast. So, Colin, how you been?
Very well. Good Christmas. Good New Year.
Yep, excellent. Yeah, it's been stinking hot here. So Colin and I both live in Sydney, primarily. And it's been ridiculously hot, like 35 degrees Celsius most of the time. So
it was 40 today.
Oh, man, it's so hot. I had a thunderstorm this afternoon, so it's cooled things down a little bit. But yeah, those who don't know,
in America, it's about 40 degrees.
There you go, yep. So stinking hot. You lived in America for a while, didn't you, Colin?
I did. Texas, Houston. Yeah. Ah. 3.5 years.
Really? I lived in the UK for 3 years. I lived in London, so that was quite cool. Yeah, enjoyed that. A little bit about ourselves to start off with. My name's Andrew. I actually am the creator of the game, Judgment. I've been involved, obviously, from day one. It's my baby. I love it. It's been a fantastic experience. We've been doing it for about 4 years now. Had two Kickstarters that were successful, and we're in retail now. And so this podcast is going to be all about the game, Judgment. And in this episode, you'll find out more about it. So Colin has done a lot of things in gaming. Most recently, he's been involved in Judgment in terms of writing most of the background material for it, the origins, and he's also a keen player. So Colin, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Yeah, I've been wargaming since I was probably early teens. Started out with 40K, ran my way through all of the Games Workshop games, and then when I moved to the States, I spent 3.5 years playing War Machine over there, which was when my real sort of competitive streak kicked in for gaming. And that's, I guess, one of the things that I see in Judgment's future is that competitive side, and that's one of the things that attracted me to the game. So it was really awesome to be able to sink my teeth into a new game around the local traps, and also get to be a bit involved in the lore and stuff, which is something I've always wanted to do. So it's been a great opportunity and great time for me. It's been an awesome time to be a gamer in Sydney.
Yeah, it's unreal. Yeah, having a game developed locally, because Colin was actually one of the very early playtesters as well. So there's a group in Sydney that we got to playtest with us, and so Colin's been on board for, I don't know, you've been playing for a couple of years now, haven't you? I think.
Don't know. It'd have to be a year and a half.
Yeah,
I would have
thought. Yeah, that's what I thought.
When was the first Kickstarter?
That was 1.5 years. Yeah, we had one last year in the middle, April, and the one year before that. So it's almost 2 years. It was February. Actually, we launched at CanCon 2 years ago, and CanCon's in 3 weeks. So it's almost two years since the first Kickstarter. Yeah, yeah. And you started playing shortly after that, I think. Playtesting with some of the models? I'm not sure. I think so.
Yeah, I think I was playtesting before then, I reckon.
Yeah, you might have been with the Paper Dolls. Yeah, yeah. Background for me, I've been... Dungeons & Dragons was my first foray back in 1987. I was playing the Temple of Elemental Evil, Village of Homlet type stuff. I really loved it. I did that for years. Then a bit about Magic the Gathering. And then went down to CanCon with my brother in the late 90s, and we walked into a massive hall full of these huge models, and we were like... Because we had some miniatures. We used to get them for D&D. Then saw this massive battle game. It was Warhammer Fantasy, we didn't know, and 40K. So we started playing that, and then, did that War Machine, and then played a bit of Guild Ball, and then wrote Judgment. So this is the game I play at the moment, but yeah. Yeah, it's been good. Right, so, Colin, let's talk about Judgment the game. The guys who are on the stream, I'm not going to mention it too much because it is an audio podcast, but if you've got any questions, fire away, and we will answer them at the end of the show if we've got time. Colin's picture is a still because we haven't got the techno stuff going for him to be streaming video at the same time, but my video is obviously live. But yeah,
this way I can not wear pants.
That's right. That's why Colin is looking so...
it's hot.
Statue-like. Oh, it is hot. Oh, yeah. 100%. Cool. All right. So, Judgment is a 54mm scale skirmish miniatures game, tabletop game. Two players, and it is. There's also two versions of the game, which is like a smaller version, which is three heroes fighting three heroes, and a big one, which is five heroes fighting five heroes, and it's MOBA based, Colin. So you've played MOBAs before, I guess. What are your favorite
MOBAs? I played a bit of Dota when it first came out back in the day, and then I played Dota 2 and League of Legends fairly extensively over the last few years. Terribly, I might add, but fairly extensively. So, I guess my biggest problem with them is that my Twitch reflexes are fairly terrible. So Judgment is an awesome port for me because you have time to actually think about what you're going to do and execute what you're trying to execute rather than randomly blackholing some space off to the side.
100%. I was the same. Like, so I, Warcraft 3, like Warcraft 2, Warcraft 3 were my original ones, and then played a bit of Dota when it first the module came out of Warcraft 3, but then I didn't play for ages, and then started playing League of Legends. So I'm a silver player at best. So I haven't got any better than that. So I'm hopeless. But anyway, so yeah, I really enjoy it, and that's what spawned. So Judgment is a MOBA base. It's inspired by the MOBAs. So you have a lot of similar elements like neutral monsters, magical artifacts you can buy. Your heroes gain levels. They respawn when they die, and things like that. And the object of the game is to destroy your opponent's base. But we have got a few differences as well, Colin. So we've got things called Souls and Fate. Do you want to quickly explain how that works?
Yeah, so do you want a little bit of background on how the three planes sort of exist?
Okay, so
realistically, the universe is a created world, deliberately created. So there were a bunch of entities that were involved in the creation, and as a result, it has lots of characteristics that don't really match what you or I would see in our standard universe around us. And there are three planes. There's three clearly defined planes. There's Athian, which is the mortal plane or the living plane. There's the shadow plane or between, so named because it's between Athian and the third plane, which is the plane of the gods. So the gods reside in that top uppermost plane. There's a bit of backstory around how they got there and how this all sort of eventuated, which we can talk about on a different one. Maybe we'll do a deep dive into the old gods or a deep dive into the history of the planes. But for the purpose of this, souls are the life force of a living being, and it transfers back into the between when someone dies on Athian. So as they die, there's a release of energy from them that crosses the barrier between the two planes and ends up as a soul on the shadow plane in between. And in the game, these are the sort of tokens that you're fighting for. So they're the scenario objectives in a way that assist you in the overall objective of destroying an effigy. And souls are something that empowers the person to an extent, and something that comes from that life force, and it drives the old gods and the new gods. So that's sort of how souls work, and they're a little token that drifts around on the battlefield, and you can also get them by shaving some of the energy off the life force of your opposing players. So when their champions die, you can extract a soul from them. And then on the other side, there's fate. And fate is sort of the crystallized power of the gods themselves. So it comes about mostly by the gods, for reasons that, again, we'll go into on another time, want to influence what's happening on Athian. And to do that, they will often gift their power to mortals that are on Athian, making them stronger, faster, more powerful, more charismatic, capable of doing things that no normal person could do. And when they do that, if that person dies, then that energy also comes back to between alongside their soul. So when that energy comes back to between, it's not exactly the same as a soul. Souls are quite difficult to access the energy from, so the champions that you're summoning in can't typically use souls to do stuff, because souls are a bound up form of energy. It's harvestable and usable by the gods themselves and by the new gods who have worked out how to do it, but it's not usable by the average hero/champion. So fate is a different thing. Fate is kind of like a liquid currency in that sense, that the heroes that pick it up can use it. So they can immediately take that power and use it to activate some of their best abilities, to enhance some of their attributes. So they can give themselves boots that will make it easier for them to run through things. They'll give themselves extra defense or extra armor or extra resilience. And that's sort of fate is the I can't think of an easy analogy to a lot of other games, really, to be honest, but it's kind of the booster that you can have in game that isn't directly an effect on scenario, but it is a overwhelming effect on the actual character play and the ability of your characters to unlock certain abilities. And it's kind of necessary for a lot of characters to do what they are designed to do.
Yeah, that's right. I think in MOBA terms, or trying to explain it in that sort of way, the souls sort of emulate what the towers do in the MOBAs. So each time you capture a soul, it weakens the opponent's effigy, which is quite difficult to destroy off the bat. So having souls reduces its health, so it lets you kill it easier. So souls is directly how you win the game, but fate is the fuel that gets you there. So without fate, it's very difficult to win the game. But in Hearn 10, souls actually generate fate for you every turn as well. So they've sort of got a symbiotic relationship together, and they're both very important. As Colin said, a lot of heroes actually rely on fate to be effective, especially doing their main things, because fate lets you do a number of things in the game, doesn't it, Colin? Lets you do your superpowers, lets you heal, lets you re-roll dice, so it makes things more accurate and things like that. So, but that's essentially how the fate and souls work in the game. And whenever I give a demo, I always say, souls is how you win the game, it's your win condition, fate's how you get there. And the thing is, the beauty of the game is we've got two win conditions that are pretty linked. As I mentioned, the soul weakens your effigy. So in the three versus three game, which is a smaller version, if you have four souls, that takes 16 health of your energy, which means it destroys. In the big game, you need five souls, but you can do a combination of both. So some souls you can harvest, and then you can start hitting the effigy directly. So there's two ways you can kind of win the game to the same effect. And now Colin gave a great explanation of how souls and fate come about, fate fluff-wise in the background, and how they work in the game as well. All right, cool. So now we're going to talk about the actual selection of your heroes. If you've played other miniature games, in Judgment there's no factions, so when you play the game you actually can pick any heroes you want to play, which makes it quite cool. It's quite refreshing to be able to do that. So whenever we release a new hero, it's available, every single player can play it. So you're not locked into dwarves or elves. The races do exist, and every hero has a race and a class, but you can mix and match how you want, just like you can in the MOBAs. So, which is quite cool, Colin, because most of the games we've played always have factions that lock you into a style of play, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a big difference between the games in general, is that and I imagine you're going to get there, and I don't want to jump ahead, but the pick and ban phase. Those two factors together mean that you can... I've never gone into a game of Judgment feeling like I wasn't going to get to play a game, like I wasn't going to get to have a fun game, because every time I go into it, I know that there are decisions I can make in the phase before the game starts that ensure that I won't feel like I have no answer to my opponent's team.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think it's and it's when we first started playing at the beginning, it was something to get used to, and a lot of new players balk at it initially. They're like, "Oh, I really like elves," and the thing is, you can play all elves. We've got 28 heroes currently in the game, which is at least five of every of the major races. So you can pick elves and play elves, or pick dwarves and play dwarves, but the beauty is, and you get more enjoyment and more out of the game if you actually just let yourself relax a bit. You still can do themes, because I've also recently, I'm playing a lot of Warcraft theme. I'm playing orcs and minotaurs only, like Tauren and orcs. So it's been quite fun. I'm doing in tomorrow's Judgment stream game, I'm actually gonna play that list against Jeff, which is quite fun. Yeah, and the other thing is as well, I find, when you're playing a certain faction in a game and you come up in a tournament against someone else's faction and you're not familiar with the faction, it puts you at a big disadvantage, and it's a lot of effort to be able to learn all the factions that you could possible in the game you play. With Judgment, because all the heroes are open to you, I don't feel like you have that disadvantage when you come to the board, because they keep playing the heroes you've played before, you're familiar with the heroes, you've tried them out, and it seems to be much easier and fairer that way as well.
Yeah, it's all your faction, right? So it's kind of like, in a sense, you will have learned about those characters because they're available to you.
Yeah, and it's 100%. And when people play Judgment who are new to the game, initially you say to them, look, just pick whatever heroes you like aesthetically, or you like certain races, or ones you like painting, and you can just do that as well. So it's quite open that way, and it's quite easy to sort of get into it. And if your friend's got a couple of heroes, you can swap heroes back and forth about being locked into a certain faction. So that's how, when you're picking a warband, the flexibility you get. But Colin alluded to it, so I'll let him chat about how the pick and ban, the various pick and ban aspects, that options you can use as well.
Yeah, so one of the things that I love about the game from a competitive point of view is, and I'm coming from a War Machine background, but it's true in 40K and various others as well, there's various matchups in the game that are horrifying in most games. So there are things where you go, well, if I have this and they have that, then I just straight lose this game. Or the other way around, they just straight lose this game. Mm-hmm. And that's always annoying, particularly from a tournament perspective. Now, it does let you set up rock, paper, scissor in some games, which is great. But if you could avoid doing it, that would be much better. And one of the things that Judgment does very well is lets you avoid that setup in the first place. So basically, when you come to a tournament or when you go play a game with your friends, hopefully you'll have either 7 characters in your warband available for a 5v5 game, or 5 available for a 3v3, or 4 available for a 3v3. And you'll be able to give your opponent the opportunity to ban one of those characters, and you get the opportunity to ban one of their characters, and then you pick from the remainder. And look, you can do it with whatever number of characters you have available between you and your friend, and you can go all the way up to having all of the characters available and doing a structured pick and ban from the start to the end, which is what we did for the King of the Grove tournament, and is my preferred game mode if you've got it. But obviously it's restricted to those who have access to a large number of characters. But that pick and ban phase, even though you're only banning one character, it has a really big effect on how you feel approaching a game, because it gives you the opportunity to go, you know, there's this character that I feel is broken, and whether or not the rest of the world thinks it's broken doesn't actually matter at that point in time. It's up to you. So if you go, I hate Brock, I hate it when my opponent has Brock, it always ruins the game for me, Brock always ends up killing all of my stuff and it's really sad, you can just ban him straight off the bat and never have to worry about it. You can just know going into the game you're never going to have to deal with that. If you hate dealing with an army full of just high res, like just people who are just camping around on 1 or 2 or 3 res, then you can at least knock down Marcus. So you can go, all right, Marcus is out, so you can't give a res to one of your other guys, and you don't have Marcus, so now you're down one of your 2 res characters. And it really lets you flex on how you want to respond to an opponent's warband, and it makes it much harder for an opponent to skew a warband in any way, shape, or form. And skew is very common in most competitive miniature games, and it's kind of the thing that most competitive miniature games really struggle to deal with, and it's really hard to deal with because you can't easily stop people from doing it without simply restricting what they're allowed to bring to a tournament, which various people have tried in various ways, and it's always ended badly. People always get upset.
Yeah, so. I think I found a judgment as well. So we've had tournaments in Australia for about a year now, and pretty much you very rarely get that salty player who says, I lost because of a particular combination, or I lost because of a particular thing, because you actually have the power to ban that out. So when you lose a judgment, it's hard to have an excuse, because they're banning one of yours, you're banning one of theirs, and you sort of play the game, and it's not because they're playing a certain faction, because they're picking from the same hero pool you are. They've got no real competitive. So before you turn up to the board, there's no competitive advantage your opponent's really got. Where with other games, whether it's right or wrong, you might think, oh, he's turned up to, like I say, Crix or something. Crix is an old one everyone always throws around. You don't have that in Judgment, because they're picking from the same pool as you. So it's really good. You still can get salty. There's plenty of salty players. But, it does reduce that. I think it's really cool. I think even in a tournament scenario where people start doing really well. So Con's been, he's won the first King of the Grove, and he's been a really strong player in a very early meta. But one of the things that Con does do is innovative. He comes up with using champions in ways that are remarkably strong. And over the course of an event, people start chattering and then start trying to ban out what he's doing. So it's actually quite cool. You get a meta evolving within a tournament itself, which I think is quite cool as well.
And annoying.
Yeah, there's that too, I guess. So the straight up pick and ban, the standard tournament is normally, like Colin said, you bring 5 for a 3v3, or you bring 7 for a 5v5. Your opponent bans one, you ban one of theirs, then you pick. But the probably the most enjoyable and the most probably fairest and funnest way to play the game is with a draft mode, where you have the pool of heroes in the middle, and all people who play MOBAs will know exactly what we're talking about. That's what every MOBA does. This is where you both alternate picking and banning until you draft your warband. We did that for a tournament, the final of the King of the Grove in Australia, and we're going to try to do that for all major events whenever we run them ourselves. And it's unbelievable fun, Colin, isn't it? It's cool.
It is. It's awesome fun. It gives you this sort of 10 to 15 minute start point for a game that is sort of a setup for the whole game. And you can see the streams of that tournament. And the first sort of 15 minutes is that pick and ban phase. And it's a little bit confusing from the outside, unless you've already read up on all the characters and you've got some kind of an idea. And most players don't give you much of a dialogue on what they're doing. I try to during my streams, because I just naturally speak all the time.
So you can
kind of get a little bit of a hint out of the stream of my game where I sort of talk about what I'm picking and banning and why.
Yeah.
Hard to do, obviously, because your opponent's there as well. But
yeah, Jeff and I've done that a few times when we do our judgment streams. We try to talk through our thought processes as well. So Colin's talking about alluding to all these videos. These videos are all available on our YouTube channel, which is Play Judgment. So if you go there, I think there's about 100, it's close to 100 games now up there, because you pretty much do one a week, and there's a bunch up there. So if you want to have a look, there's all sorts of different games and styles and all the players. There's ones of Colin playing and a bunch of people. So yeah, check it out.
One of the things I also wanted to mention was, because we've sort of said, you know, this draft mode is the peak mode in that sense. I think it's really important to make it clear that if you only have seven characters and your mate's only got seven characters and some of them overlap, you can still do that mode. So you can still rock up, and there's a couple of different ways you could do it. You could download paper dolls if you wanted to fill out the rest of the force, or alternately you can just put all 14 of those characters in the middle and do a pick and ban. And if there's two Thorgars there, you just make it that if one person picks a Thorgar, the other person can pick the other Thorgar, but that person can't anymore.
Yeah.
So you just make it so you can't double up. And that's definitely doable, and I think it's worth trying for anyone who's in a small meta with only sort of, you know, each player's got half a dozen models or something like that. It's a really good way to give you a chance to play with some other stuff and see which things you like and which things you might want to get for yourself. And I think the paper dolls are a great addition to the game. I mean, everyone loves to play with painted miniatures if they can, and I fully endorse doing so. But certainly, like, getting those out just so that you get a chance to play with some characters you haven't tried before you buy them is a great idea.
Yes, this is really good, actually. Probably should lead off with this, but it's great, very important. Colin's mentioning paper dolls and all the print and play. So on our website, you've got print and play. You can print the whole game, the rules, all the paper dolls, tokens and stuff. And there's two apps. There's an iOS app and an Android app. They're both called Warband Commander now when you go and search on the stores. And in the apps, they've got all the games, all the rules, all the hero cards, all the magical artifacts.
They're amazing apps.
Yeah, track your damage during the game. Like, they're fully operational apps. So if you're new and you want to see what it's all about, you can not spend a cent. The apps are free. All the printer play is obviously free for you to take and do what you want with. And then you can play. I mean, the hardest thing is probably getting the board. But even then, you can just play on any sort of board. We have the maps. That we do print all the measurements for all the maps. Because another thing that's actually... right, so before I get on to that, but yeah, so for new players, very accessible, jump on the website, judgment.game, and you can find all about it there, and all about the print and play. So Colin, another thing that's actually quite unique is the maps that we use have got pre-printed terrain on them, and various scenarios available on the one neoprene mat as well.
Yes. Yeah, the maps are really awesome. I think one of the things that's unusual about the game is that it's played on a circular board. In effect, which is a very, like, it feels different when you're playing on it.
And it's weird,
it does, and it's cool because it kind of concentrates the action, right? Because most of the square boards that we play on, nothing happens in those four corners. Like, it doesn't matter which game you're playing. Generally, if something's in one of those four corners, it's because it has such ridiculous range that everybody feels bad about it anyway and would prefer that it wasn't there. So it's really cool that those are sort of chopped out. It makes it a bit harder for the print and play side of things, I imagine, for people. But it's a really cool addition to the game. And the pre-printed boards are great in terms of getting on top of scenario early and having a scenario so that everybody knows what they're playing for, how they're playing it.
Yeah.
You can see different things. You've got a whole variety of maps that you can randomly choose and play through. And they do give very different games. It's one of the things that I found very interesting is some maps, different characters work significantly better or worse on.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, because in the 3v3 game, we've got two maps. We've got a cobblestone theme one and a swamp theme one, and they play dramatically differently, even though it's the same sort of game. They have different monsters on the neutral monsters as well on them. And there's one 5v5 map we've got at the moment, which is cobblestone. We are going to bring out a new one in this year. But yeah, so as Colin said, they make a big difference and they're quite fun. And at a tournament, very easy to set up. You roll the mat out. Each mat's got, on the small ones, it's got four scenarios each, and there's six on the big one. And you just roll which one you're playing, and away you go. So all the terrain's already there, and it tells you where all the different elements are, where the shrines and effigies and all the different components are set up each game, so, which is really good.
And I think it's worth having a brief blurb on the monsters, because I think they're one of the things that is truly unique to Judgment, in that I don't know of any other tabletop miniature game that has in any way, shape or form integrated NPC models
yeah.
in a good way. Like yeah. anywhere that I know that has attempted it, it has always been a sort of throwaway joke and has wrecked the game generally.
So yeah, that's interesting. So with this one, we've got neutral monsters. Now this is another thing when you get new players trying it, particularly if they're from other games, maybe probably because of past experiences, but they always balk at the fact that there's neutral monsters on the board. We've built in an AI, artificial intelligence, for each of the monsters that lets them, it's very basic, lets them go towards, they sort of gravitate towards enemy heroes, and whenever they are within melee range or shooting range, if they've got a shooting weapon, they'll fight them. So it sounds pretty simple, but when you're actually playing the game, you have all these sort of scenarios where you're pushing your enemy models into the monster's range to get hit. You can throw them into them, or you can, there's heroes that can switch places with other heroes, so all this sort of movement, and the really good players actually get the most they can out of the monsters. You can take a low damage warband if it can actually manipulate monsters well and get the monsters to do most of the damage for you, which works quite cool. There's currently four monsters in the game. They all have different unique abilities as well. They have their own stat cards, just like the heroes do. But they are neutral, so they're enemy to both model both players. And yeah, they're really good fun component, like Colin said. And I've heard a lot of times what Colin said there. Remember when Loud Chris first played, he was like, oh, I thought they were just a gimmick. But oh man, you know, when you start playing, the monsters are really important. And yeah, they really are. That's so when you talk about a scenario, it tells you as well which monsters are on the board and where they spawn from. And just like the heroes, the monsters respawn. And like in MOBAs, the monsters drop loot, which is normally fate. They let you gain experience and level up your heroes. So they become a really good source of power, the fate and levels, to fuel your warband towards winning. Normally the monsters aren't linked to souls in any way, that's enemy heroes, but the monsters do a lot of huge things, which is great fun. And yeah, and people who play Judgment enjoy collecting the models as well, the monster ones, and yeah, they're quite cool.
And they're kind of critical, like they're surprisingly critical to how your warband plays a lot of the time. So most players will end up having a plan for turn one killing a monster to give a specific character a level.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that initial strategy, part of your strategy during the game. This is another thing that's different to a lot of other games, is you don't lock in your list. So you lock in your warband when you start, but from that point, you can actually can tailor it a lot. You can buy different magical artifacts to change the way the heroes work, and also counter your opponent. And you also can level up particular heroes, give them priority, which also can change the way that your warband plays. So you get a lot of control to change the way your warband plays after the game has started, which is a quite cool element as well, I find.
Yeah, definitely. And going in with plans on what your options are really benefits you. So making a 7-man warband, or having an idea behind what you're going to draft that incorporates what magic items you might buy in order to change that warband around, is really critical. You can take characters and turn them into res 2 or 3 from being res 0 or 1 using Marcus and an item, and that completely changes how that character plays and completely changes how your opponent has to deal with it. And if they don't have the appropriate tool to deal with it, then it becomes a real problem for them very quickly.
Yeah, they've
and got it's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, and they've got the option of maybe trying to find an item in the deck, because both players get access to the same artifact decks, so you can try to find something to try to counter what they're doing. Or, you know, there's an artifact now that nullifies magical items, so you can do it that way. So yeah, there's a lot of cool things you can do. The two elements that new players, I mean, when you first learn the game, you probably often don't teach with magical artifacts in the first time I demo the game. But when you start getting better at the game, learning how to use magical artifacts and monsters effectively is a massive bonus. It's a big learning curve, but once you learn that, it's really will elevate your play. As you watch someone like Colin playing, he's very good at level up strategies, which heroes to level up, what items to buy, and very good at manipulating the monsters on the board as well, which is quite a big skill. You'll see a lot of that on the videos that we've put out anyway, that we publish, but yeah, it's pretty cool.
Except for Ashtooth, because that guy doesn't get manipulated and instead kills half your warband, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, he's quite brutal. So some of the powerful monsters give you a bigger bounty, but yeah, so Ashtooth at the moment is a werewolf, and he's the most daunting model. He's the biggest monster model, and he's also the most powerful, and he gives you two fate when you kill him, which is fantastic.
He's the hardest to kill, and it's surprising how often you fall short on trying to kill him.
He's nuts. Yeah, he is. So that's a good rundown of the game and how it's working. One thing I want to touch on now is a bit more of the fluff. So, Colin, with the range of 28 heroes, the majority are pretty much traditional fantasy type heroes, but we do have about half a dozen or so from different streams, different timelines. We have a couple of World War II themed heroes, and also futuristic, spacey type heroes, which is keeping with the MOBA feel, and we've managed to translate that to the tabletop pretty well. So, Colin, how does that work in terms of background?
So, one important thing to try and understand, and it is hard to understand, and it's hard to think about, is that the three planes are kind of, to go back to how this whole thing was formed. Basically, there were four entities, and they forced a fifth entity to become the entirety of this universe. So this contained set of three planes is basically built out of the essence and power of one of these entities, and then some of the powers of the other four. So the other four became the old gods, the big gods, and Torin, who was the fifth, became effectively time and space. So his essence and body forms this entire place, the three planes, and it's not more evident anywhere except for Between. Between is his realm, it's his plane, and there's no time effectively within Between. Meaning that time's progress on Athian, which has a standard timeline, is not matched in between. So you could enter between from a date at the very beginning of creation, or you could enter Athian, you could enter from Athian at the end of creation, whenever that may be, and you could meet yourself in between. On account of the fact that they're two different instances of you both entering, that plane doesn't give a damn about your linear time. And that's very confusing to grasp initially, and it's a big part of how this whole timeline thing ties in. When champions are transported to Between, they bring with them a sense of time, of linear time. They bring it because what actually goes to Between is their essence of their will. It's sort of your mind rather than anything else. It's your mind and your spirit. And if you believe firmly enough in linear time, then you kind of create a bubble around you of linear time, which is the area that we're fighting in. And that's kind of why you have this circular area of a fighting area. These are 10 champions or six champions that have been transported here. All of them believe in linear time, so they fight in linear time. And so they create this bubble of linear time that they fight in while they're there. But you could get there from any particular timeline because when the new gods summon you, when they bring you forth from the effigy, and when they pull you from Athian, they're just reaching out across the void, and they are reaching from a place that does not have time. So they can pick you up from any point in your life and pull you across to do what they want you to do. So we have some people who are being pulled from this sort of fantasy era, which is the early part of Athian. And then we have some people that are pulled from thousands of years later, effectively. And those people might be from either, as you say, the World War II era, although I guess it's just the same level of industrialization as we saw in World War II.
That's
And
right.
then from a future era. So we have a couple of characters from the far, far distant future from that point, and they've got, you know, technology in their mind that they would see as standard for them. And that's kind of the really critical part, and the reason that Judgment has so much leeway to play with what the characters look like is that this is their mental image of themselves that you're seeing. So when they get pulled into Between, this is their will and spirit projecting. So what they see themselves as is what you see. So if they come over and they're used to fighting with a laser sword where they're from, then their weapons will manifest as laser swords. If they're used to fighting with a giant crossbow, their weapon will manifest as a giant crossbow. Now, they're not necessarily using exactly that, which is why you don't get a dramatic difference between the effect of a guy with a knife and a guy with a laser sword, because that's just how they are seeing it and how they are perceiving it and how they are making the others around them perceive it. So they fight with what they're used to.
Yeah,
And
it's
that's,
yeah. Sorry.
yeah, go for it.
I was gonna say, yeah, so the key thing there is the physical being is not actually transported to fight on the shadow plane. It's a manifestation of of themselves, and there's a cord linking back to their physical body, which stays in the thing and goes into sort of stasis while they're fighting. So that's why when a model dies on the Shadow Plane in the game, all it basically means is their cord is temporarily cut to their physical body, and it remanifests themselves through the power of the effigy, and they respawn. So that's why how that's how that that's why that the fact that when they die, they're not dead forever. And like Connor's talking about how the way they perceive themselves is how they actually appear. So Kvardo is one of the heroes in the game that actually is much different on. So he's had a twin who died at birth, and so on. Athene is just the big body, but when he actually goes into the fight in between, his brother actually comes out of his stomach and fights, and he manifests him as part of his being as well.
Yeah, and it gives a lot of room to play around for those that want to do conversions or those that want to do different color schemes or paint schemes. Like, you can do whatever you want, right? Because this is how this person is perceiving themselves at that point in time in their life when they were summoned. So maybe there was a period in time where Rakia was dressed up as Father Christmas and doing crazy shit off in the corner, and that's what you want as the day that he was pulled in. And that's okay. Like, as long as it's still clear to your opponent what that character is, you can do what you want. You can make him look how you want.
Is true. We love to be able to do skins like you do on MOBAs, but it's unfortunately a lot more expensive to do a physical skin on a model than it is to do a graphic one. But anyway,
Yeah, you got to leave room for the character for the players to do it, right?
yeah, that's true. Yeah, they can sort of
Get
dress
out your green stuff and make a
up.
Santa hat.
That's right. Yeah, so that's a bit more information around how the heroes are transported and about the world. Now, there is a video on our YouTube channel where Colin and I did a whole episode on this. It was a while ago, and we have been intending to do it again because we have announced that we've got a new race joining the fight, which is goblins, and we've also mentioned we've got undead coming, which is very interesting. So we are due to do another proper show. We might do it a podcast now and actually go in depth into how this all works and how the world's evolving. Because even though there's no timeline on between, the Athian timeline is moving, and we do allude to that with someone like Zarin. So Zarin's one of the necromancers who's a human at the moment in the game, but we do know in the future he actually becomes some kind of lich, and it's a bit unclear how that happens. So there's other kinds of things that we'll be explaining as the game develops as well. Right, so Colin, what we might do now is actually have a chat about a bit more some of the heroes we actually like and talk about them a bit more, either model-wise or rules-wise or background-wise or anything like that. So for people who want to have a bit of direction on what heroes to look at, we can probably have talk about a few that we like.
Yeah, do you want to do one for background, one for gameplay, and
Yeah.
one for what was the other
The
one?
model. Yeah.
Ah, the model. Yeah, okay,
Yeah.
sure.
All right, yeah, first you pick one if you want
You want
to
to start
start.
with the model first, because that's my least, like, that's the one where I'm like, Donruk wins and I don't really have to describe why.
Okay, all right, yeah, you can do that. So Colin's favorite hero model wise is
Is Donruk, because
Donruk.
he's an absolute machine. He's a monster of a model. He's really huge. He's a great centerpiece. He's got a cool base that has this sort of swirling rock style flowing around it, and he's a massive, tanky looking minotaur who just sort of stands there and just looks awesome. Like, he's just a great model.
Yeah, the amount of people who have said, in fact, today on our Discord channel, Jaden actually mentioned, saw Jon Arca a year ago, got me into the game. And the amount of people that say that's remarkable. It's interesting you talk about the swirling rocks. So people often ask about how they've come about. It's quite amazing how it works. A lot of the time, I'll have a clear idea of what I want. Jon Arca was one of them. It was a shaman casting stone form. The stone started to form around him. He's got this big, powerful elemental. He's at the absolute limits of his strength, and his muscles are bulging, and that's how he came about. So it was quite clear the way I wanted him to look. But then getting it that to work is obviously difficult. I mean, his hair is meant to be showing that there's wind swirling around him. You look at his hair, it's all swirling one way, and it's really cool the capture. So having that, saying that, and putting that on paper, then getting it illustrated, but then getting the sculptor to do it is another thing. So, and there's three different people. So if it's me or whoever of the judgment team designing a hero, then an illustrator drawing it's a different person, and the sculptor's a different person. So getting that lost in translation is quite easy. But so Donark is one of the ones that just sort of come out, and he was one of the early ones we did, and he was amazing. And people. 54 mil, if you're going to play 54 mil, and we said this from the start, let's do it they're still on big, like, you know, 54 mil Minotaurs should be big, and they're much bigger than 54 mil. So
no kidding.
So okay, so your model wise is Don Raka. I'm just looking around that's behind me. I probably, it's hard for me, I'm gonna say Haxar, I think. Haxar.
It is a sweet model.
Yeah, I'll pick Haxar. I could pick five quite easily. Haxar is one of the other ones. I got inspiration from Haxar. You know the monkey in Lion King? He sort of has that sort of, that he stands on his staff a bit sometimes and things like
that. Yeah.
That was one of the very.
So it wasn't Wukong.
Actually, Wukong does it as well. Wukong does, and he's one of the ones.
And the Monkey King in Dota 2 does it too.
Yeah. So, I guess, look, I've played Wukong. I mained him. When I say mained him, I mained him in bronze for a year, for a season back then. So he's one of my favorite heroes. But anyway, maybe it was it's in my head. But I remember
subconsciously. Yeah.
I remember sending the picture of the monkey from Lion King to the illustrator initially and saying, look, this is the kind of idea, and I'd like him to be lanky and not bulky. And so I think if I picked it now, it'd be Haxar, I think. So all right, that's good. So model wise we've got Haxar and Don Raka. Next one was fluff wise Colin, is it someone else?
Yeah, so fluff wise the one I have a soft spot for and that I'm gonna try and I think do a little bit more development on as well in the future is Thrommel. So Thrommel and Thorgar are both backgrounds that I really like. Thrommel was the cause of my interest in the rest of the Dwarven story. Like, while writing specifically about Thrommel was when I decided, like, some of the factors for how the Dwarves were going to make their way through the timeline and how things were going to go for them. I like him because he's just a, I don't know, he's a guy who is in a relationship with the prince, there's the queen, and they've been in hiding this whole time, and now he's been sort of sent to the mainland to try and persuade everybody that having a king again or a queen again is a good idea. And that's not an easy task. There's a whole bunch of people on the mainland that have no interest in the monarchy ever returning. Mm-hmm. And he's a very straight up person. He's very much, he believes this is the right thing and believes that the monarchy is the right thing. And so he gets a little bit of resistance from some of the others, and I've always liked that character. I like him as a character and dislike him in the game.
Sensational. So it's Thrommel for fluff background, that's fantastic. Alright, so for me I think it's going to be Styx. Styx is one of the ones where I had him very early on. There was Zarin, who was the powerful necromancer, and he was the first one to be summoned, and He created the Shadow Orbs for Rakir, and I really liked Zarin. But then what really got my interest going was his offsider and Styx. And Styx's story, so for people who don't know, if you look back at the original Kickstarter we had, there's a picture of Styx, a line drawing, where he's actually like an undertaker. He's wearing a suit with a top hat, and he's pure fantasy, because he originally was written that way. He didn't get released in the first Kickstarter, and then the game evolved, and by the time it came to doing the second Kickstarter, I really thought the storyline for him, the arc for him, is Zarin became an undead and lived for 1,000 years. How do Styx hang around? And he became a cyborg, which kept him alive. So the thing about and the model, he's still got the top hat, so he still has the tie into his original form. And the tails. So if you're wondering why he's got a top hat and tails, that's why, because that's what he wore in his original line drawing and his original manifestation of the character. So I like how his devotion was so great to his master that he sacrificed himself. And cyborgs in the modern world, in the futuristic world, are very common. Well, not common, but it's done in a humane way, and it does happen. But Styx was done very painfully by Zarin when it wasn't actually done humanely. So yeah, I think Styx, I like him in the game as well. I love his model, his background, and his rules. But yeah, so all right, that's interesting. Just quickly, I'll read these out because it will still work for the podcast. So a few people have said, Droffy said Nefini was what signed him up for the game. Mr. Wolf from Netherlands said it was Zonya. So interesting. Droffy also liked Laurie Bellin. So you can just see the differences, right? So Nefini is a delicate, futuristic space elf chick. Donrak, who is a traditional shaman, massive, muscly, minotaur male. And those two monitors are what two different people liked as their favourite hero. So,
and Sonya is a fantasy orc with a massive battle axe.
Yeah, female orc. Yeah, so cool. Okay, so we've talked about fluff. We've talked about model. So now we're going to talk about... So George from the Netherlands is saying Thorgar for him.
Yeah, Thorgar's a fair call.
Yeah, he's good.
Pretty and awesome model.
Awesome model. And as you said, so there's a photo of me, my wife took, of me trying to do the Thorgar pose to send to the illustrator. Now, I used to be quite athletic, but I'm a bit older these days, so getting that pose and holding it was, it wasn't fantastic, but I managed to, I don't know, it worked. So this is the kind of thing that you get, when people ask where they come from. So the Thorgar charging Minotaur, I wanted him to have gore thrust, and I wanted it to look possible that he was doing it. So I thought, well, yeah, let's do it. Like Minotaur, their horns and their head is a weapon. So yeah, it's I was really happy how he turned out. So cool. Right, Colin. So rules wise, what's your pick?
I will stick with the traditional Brock for me, which is the character I've probably used the most. And rules wise, one of the reasons is I really like aggressors that can hit more than one target in an action. And the second part for me is that Brock is the most secure killer of monsters, and killing monsters is super critical to the early game.
Yeah, so for those who are new, Brock has got the Monster Slayer rule, so he gets +1 damage versus monsters. Which when you've got, he's also got a backswing rule, so he can actually get 2 attacks per action if he plays it well, which really adds up his damage. So he's super high damage against monsters. He's also a cool model. He's like an old Slayer sort of dwarf maniac, you know. And, he's got some cool rules when he levels up. His level 2 and level 3 abilities are quite awesome. Yeah, he's a good one. He's a good pick. And now
he's a good all-rounder for a warband too.
Yeah,
he has a nice answer for people with high res. He has a decent answer for people with low res and high agi, and he's in general pretty handy. His only downside is that he's reasonably easy for the opponent to kill.
Yeah, that's right. He's agility 3, and especially if they've got fire on their side, he can go down pretty good. He's also a cool model. So one of the things we also wanted to do was do dwarfs, well, I'm going to say inverted commas, properly. There's a lot of games, you look at the models and the dwarfs just get bigger and bigger and bigger, or they're just massively wide, or I don't know, they're so top heavy. And so we kind of wanted to do them proportioned. And I think we've done a fairly good job overall. I think Laurie Bella Brock and Trommel are quite good dwarf models. Some of the new ones we've got the Balnaskis, he's cool. So yeah, there's some good ones. Oh yeah, we've got Svetlana. So yeah, the dwarf range is something that we take a lot of care with when we do and make sure we get the scale right. So he's cool. I think for me, I'm going to have to say Rakir, rules-wise. I love the Shadow Orbs. I love his style of hit and run. I love his background. He was the first hero we ever did. He was the first one we ever designed. And he's still the test of time. He's still very good. He's just really good. I love the model as well. So, I think rules-wise, I have to say him. I think... Other ones I liked, special mentions, I like Skull, really like Sticks, but I'll stick with Rakir. So we both picked aggressors, which is interesting.
I think that's pretty common, right? Like your most people, I think, are going to sort of highlight a character that they feel they can base the game around. Like they can rely on that character to go do things that kill people.
Yeah. I mean, I think the criticism... So the reason why I like Rakir as well, because where Brock is kind of, he's just going to go nuts and he's going to get in your face, and Rakir has a bit more subtlety to him. He's not as efficient. He's not as consistently damage-wise as Brock. He has a lot more, has a big potential with his fade ability, Toxin. But that's pretty good, I think. But like you can tell when you're hearing Colin and I talk, there's like, we both could play without those two models and still be putting together great warbands and, you know, having fun. And it's not the kind of thing where if you get that one banned, it's devastating for you.
No. I played 5-man funnel into Kogan for a little while there, and I've played a 5-man funnel into Barnaskis.
yeah, Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, exactly. You can do the, and the funnel thing's quite cool. It is so true in the game that you can do that kind of thing where you're funneling. I'm just going to read on a couple other hero favorites. Joffrey's got Victor, Tort is Styx, and George, I think, is Piper, looks like, which is great. Yeah, so I think Piper's another one that's interesting. I mean, this, we're gonna say that I'm gonna say there's interesting characters all day, but I recommend if you're interested, check out the website because all the actual cards of the rules for the models are there as well. Or get the apps and
Yeah,
just thumb
I'd
through
go
the
to the app
apps.
if you want
Yeah,
the rules and stuff, and then the website's got all the stories and background and stuff.
that's right. Right, so that's good. So that's Colin and I talked about the favorite heroes for the three different streams we talked about. Now, Colin, before we go, it's getting close to the hour, and this is going to be an hour podcast. We'll probably I haven't actually spoken about how often we're going to do it. I'd like to do it every week, but maybe every 2 weeks. I don't know. I've chatted to Colin offline, but you'll get another one soon. I think the late will be at least another 2 weeks, so maybe early. We'll see how we go. We can con Colin, so that's coming up in 3 weeks, I think, just under.
Yeah, Australia Day.
Yeah, so you're attending, aren't you? You know what your
I am.
seven is yet? Do you know what your seven is, or?
No, I haven't actually locked in a seven at all yet.
Okay,
I've got to
cool.
pick up a couple more models back off you too. I still need a Kogan and a.
Right.
I think there's one more.
Yeah, we've got them now. Yeah, so we can get them to you. So that's good. So people, the CanCon is a convention. That's the biggest miniature gaming convention, pure miniature gaming. In Australia, it's quite good. There's a lot of different game systems there. I mean, every game system's there basically. And we've got Judgment there this year, which is great. And Colin's got to play. It's a 5v5 tournament, just a 1 day event, 3 rounds. We've got 14 players locked in at the moment, which is quite cool. So it's going to be quite interesting. So we'll talk about that maybe the episode we do just before CanCon. I'm not playing, obviously. I'm running. We've got a Judgment stall there as well, and Jeffrey's running the event. So we're not playing in it, but I will put together a seven that I would play if I was going. So, and Colin and I will probably have a chat one of the episodes where we talk about what we're taking, what we would take, and then post CanCon we can chat about how Colin goes. He's one of the favourites. So it's interesting to see how he goes. There's a few
You're gonna
people.
make me chat about my warband before I go, and then
Oh.
chat about how it went after everybody teched against it.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that'd be cool. Let's make it harder for you. Why not? Yeah, so that's good. So right, yeah, anything else, Colin, before we go?
No, I think we're gonna see if there are any questions that had been thrown up,
Yeah, I
but.
think people have been just been talking just in general about stuff on the way. There's no real questions I can see. In future, if you've got questions you want us to answer, we can answer them at the end. But today I think it was today we've got most of our regulars on there, so that's they're just sort of chatting amongst themselves and with us about what we're talking about. So,
Yeah, well, if you're listening to this, you should find some friends that are vaguely interested in possibly looking at the game and get them to listen to it too.
so definitely, the game is growing pretty rapidly. You can access us everywhere. We've got a Discord channel. We've got we're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We stream regularly. We're doing the podcast now, so reach out. So when I put this, the stream, the podcast will go up on. Couple of different pod hosting sites which I'll determine soon and get them up there, but you'll be able to download them all. So recommend, yeah, have a look at the game, have a read, speak to your friends if they want to get involved. Like as we said, you can print and play everything, so you can try the game without actually buying anything, which is great. That's it. Yeah, so feel free to reach out to us. Colin and I were looking for content, so if people have things they want us to do, please reach out with a request that you'd like us to talk about or whatever, and we'll slot that into our episode schedule, which we don't have at the moment. So we're pretty open clean slate. So Colin, thanks a lot, mate. Thanks for joining me. It's been
My
great.
pleasure.
Yeah, it's been good. So we'll be doing this regularly and getting them out there. We're hoping to build up the podcast to getting a decent audience, and we're looking forward to people getting involved both while we're live streaming it and also asking us questions in between the episodes so we can answer them on the episodes. Great. Thanks very much, everyone. Say good night, and we'll speak to you soon.
See you all later.
Bye.